This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 12th of October 2012. Hello there and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 12th of October 2012, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Your readers today are Claire Caffreen.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithfull. Now let's look at what's on. Well, starting tonight, there's the Winchester Chronicles of Light at the Cathedral. And that's on from the 12th of October to the 28th of October. And prices of tickets are from £10 to £50. And it's a big visual display of images with lots of sound. And if you're interested in a ticket, please phone 857 275. That's a Winchester number, 01962 857 275. Now, the other thing which may be of interest is an electric blanket programme organised by fire stations to check that you don't actually get burnt in bed. And there's one at Romsey Fire Station on the Monday the 15th of October. That's in Alma Road in Romsey. And then there's one at Winchester Fire Station. That's at Eastern Lane, Winnell, on Friday 19th of October. And then there's one in Bishop's Waltham, Jubilee Hall. That's Monday the 29th of October. Now, the appointments are only by appointment, so you can't just turn up. Make an appointment by telephoning 01962 833 358. And now we've also got the Naomi House Autumn Gift Fair, which will take place at Wesley Methodist Church Hall in Week on Saturday, October the 27th. Shoppers can choose from hundreds of gift ideas, including handmade crafts, jewellery, toiletries, locally made jams and chutneys, Chinese porcelain and other oriental gifts. The doors are open at 10 a.m. and entry is simply by donation. If you want to book a stall, you contact Linda Nichols on 01962 870 810. And there are various theatre events which are happening in the area. If you want to see the legendary Sir Roger Moore, he's at the Mayflower, Southampton, on Tuesday, October the 16th, and he's at the Basingstoke Anvil on Tuesday, October the 23rd. And he'll give you a selection of inside stories and unheard anecdotes, followed by a question and answer. For tickets to the Southampton show, which starts at 2:30 p.m., call 023 8071 1811. That's 023 8071 1811. For the Basingstoke event, which starts at 7:45, call 01256 844 244. Now, the theatre, the Chesil Theatre, is putting on Entertaining Angels, starting at 7:45, beginning on Saturday, October the 13th, and it goes on to Saturday, October the 20th. It's a comedy, and for further information, you can go to www.chesiltheatre.org.co.uk. At the Nuffield Theatre, from Saturday, October the 16th to the 20th of October, is Our Country's Good, and that's at 7:30, box office number 023 8067 1771. And I think that really is about it for what's on. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 12th of October at 7:25 a.m. and begins at 6:19 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 17th of October, it ends at 7:33 a.m. and begins at 6:09 p.m. If you have any problems with your memory stick, there is a laminated card inside your wallet to contact Lynn Parker on telephone number 01962 862 826, and she will then send you a replacement. Please replace the card inside the wallet when you send the memory stick back. Also, if you have a problem with your Sapphire player before returning it as faulty, please plug in the mains charger and ensure the battery is fully charged, as several have been returned as faulty and have simply needed to be charged up. And the front page headline stories this week are Nightmare Junction to be improved, confusion over Towns Grant labelled farcical, A34 shut after transporter crashes. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline story, please, Claire?
Nightmare Junction to be improved. Winchester's worst congestion black spot could be eased by an improvement scheme announced by the Highways Agency. Traffic tailbacks have become a worsening problem on Eastern Lane in Winnell, especially at the afternoon rush hours as the M3-A34 interchange struggles to cope with demand. On Friday afternoons, the tailbacks on Eastern Lane leading out of the city can start as early as 3 p.m. The agency has announced it will spend £400,000 next year on better signing and lane designation, although the exact details have yet to be decided, said an agency spokesman. The agency has also announced schemes at M27 Junction 5 Eastleigh, widening approach roads, £4.9 million between 214 and 215, and M27 Junction 3 Southampton, road widening, £2 million to 2014 to 2015. Eastern Lane has been the city's worst traffic problem spot for at least 10 years, and probably since the Winchester bypass was removed when the M3 was completed through Twyford Down in 1994. The news has been widely welcomed by Winnell businesses. Richard Parker, managing director at Rivers Engineering and Moorside Road, said, "Improvements are long overdue, so I very much welcome that, because it can become impossible to move at peak times. But I think it will take a lot more money than £400,000, and it sounds like it will just be a sticking plaster. The A34 should run underneath the motorway or be moved around it, because the real problem is all the traffic coming off the M3 to go onto the A34. Stephen Edwards, managing director at Culverland Press and Winnell Valley Road, said, "Spending any money on that road has to be good news. It's absolutely horrendous at the moment. They just need to create a lane coming out of Winchester that directs traffic solely down the A34. That would make life so much easier." A spokesman for the Base Point Business Centre in Winnell said, "The planned funding is an important step in improving traffic flow. Access will be greatly improved for all businesses within the Winnell business estate and will help to boost the local economy." Winchester and Chandler's Ford MP Steve Bryan said, "Since my election, I have badgered transport ministers about this junction, which causes my constituents a great many problems. So any investment which eases congestion, and the knock-on effect that has for Winnell especially, is welcome. But I very much see this as phase one of much wider works."
And now let's have the story behind the second front page headline, Noel.
Yes, confusion over Towns Grant labelled farcical. Further doubt has been cast over a £10,000 grant for Bishop's Waltham after councillors branded the proposal farcical. The town is in line for the cash as a consolation prize after unsuccessful bids to be part of retail guru Mary Portis's High Street Regeneration Scheme. But parish councillors have locked horns on how best to use the money. Originally earmarked to pay for a town centre administrator to boost trade, there was strong opposition at a parish council meeting on Tuesday. The meeting heard that the administrator would be employed for 1 or 2 days a week at approximately £37,000 pro rata, with future payments being met by funds from both the city council and the parish. Money, Councillor Terry Wilson felt, could not be justified. "It's just farcical to me," he said. "I discussed this with the Chamber of Trade at the time back in 2008, and they said no. But why should the parish council be paying money so that businesses can earn more money for themselves?" Addressing the meeting, Councillor Rona Pickering said she had not ruled out the idea but urged further consideration. She said, "How can we justify spending this amount on only one area of Bishop's Waltham? Of course the town centre is important, but so are other projects." Councillor Robert Shields expressed support for the idea, said, "The town centre is Bishop's Waltham. This money is pumping Winchester City Council to support our town. The details at present are sketchy. Is it work other groups should be doing?" "Well, I'm afraid the other groups are stretched. We've been talking about it for ages, and this is a chance to get it done." In May, the Parish Council cooperated with the Chamber of Trade to set up a town team, prompting Councillor Wilson to ask, "If we have this town manager, are we going to get rid of the town team, or are we going to have them both? It just does not make sense to me." Councillor Barry Nicholson said in response, "As a member of the town team, I need to say that the town team was set up to secure the Porter's Fund. I suggest we defer voting on this item until we know whether we have the £10,000.
And the third story, please, Sheila.
A34 shut after transporter crashes. Motorists had their journeys disrupted after a dramatic accident closed one of the South's major roads. The A34 was shut in both directions after a car transporter being towed by a recovery truck broke free and smashed through the central reservation near Whitchurch at 11 p.m. on Monday. No one was injured. The road was closed for repairs to the surface and barriers, and traffic diverted onto the heavily congested M3. It was fully reopened by 4 p.m. on Tuesday. To add to the disruption, two more M3 incidents hit the area a few hours later. They were a coach fire at Winchester Services at around 6:30 a.m., which caused hour-long delays. Southbound was partially blocked at around 8 a.m. after a collision between junctions 11 and 12 at Eastleigh. The 29-year-old driver of the tow truck was arrested for dangerous driving, driving with an insecure load and causing danger to other road users. Police have appealed for witnesses to the crash, which happened as the load travelled south towards Bullington Cross. The transporter was believed to be carrying Land Rovers. Witnesses should contact Sergeant Lyndon Barrett, quoting Operation Bodmin, by phoning 101.
And that concludes the front page headline stories. And now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and chronicle comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Couch. Rabina née Burgess Couch, peacefully at home, aged 78. Fisher. Sandra Fisher. Peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 68. Gould, John Cheryl Wynne Gould. Petty, David Roy Captain T.D. Petty, in hospital, aged 86. Voller, Pat Voller. Peacefully, aged 95, at Queen Alexandra Hospital, Portsmouth. And James, Ronald Ron James, following a short illness at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 93. And now it's Christian comment, read by Claire.
Christian comment today is entitled Honest Chronicles. This Friday sees the premiere of Winchester Chronicles of Light at the Cathedral. The mysteries of the unconscious are hard to fathom, but the chronicles in the title may well have been sparked by familiarity with this newspaper. Chronicle literally means about time. People record chronicles to describe the landscape of their own time. 1642 would be one year among many were it not for the fact that this was the year when the cathedral was overrun by parliamentarian soldiers. In the records we have of it, we can still hear the shock and outrage of the incursion. All of us have to make sense of time. The poet Philip Larkin wrote, "What are days for? Days are where we live. They come, they wake us, time and time over." It's a human instinct to try and make something out of the framework of hours, days and weeks in which we are bound to live. I have learned one big lesson from the experience of trying to re-chronicle the cathedral's thousand-year history: the need for honesty. Even if you are telling the story to include children, you should try to present events in their humanity and at least some of their complexity. For example, Josephine Butler's work among the fallen women of her day was hard and resented work. Her achievement has only recently come to be celebrated. And what she achieved didn't arise simply from a sense of injustice, but from the grief of losing a beloved child. The Church has not always been a fully honest storyteller. In past times, the faithful were fed with a diet of tales about plaster saints, figures who they were expected to venerate but could hardly aspire to imitate. But what a relief it is to know from her diaries that Mother Teresa lived for years with no tangible sense of God and yet carried on serving his hidden presence in the poor. To see the landscape of our lives well, we need to be honest in the stories we tell about ourselves and others. Our perspectives will always be partial and prejudiced. Some stories we will need to tell many times to approach their meaning, which is why writing them down is important. Chronicles at their best give us a chance to reflect on the time of our lives, and the title, Chronicles of Light, hints at the possibility that sometimes what we find in events told honestly is real illumination. Ronald Rehm.
Now we've got 11 letters to the editor this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, Phil Yates says, "There's nought like a brass band." "Sir, there's nought like a brass band, lad," a Yorkshire miner told me whilst working down pit, and how right he was. On a sunny summer's afternoon, my Bevan boy mates and I regularly went to the park at Pontefract, West Yorkshire, and listened to the Grimethorpe Colliery Band, recently at the Anvil, Basingstoke, playing hit songs of the 40s from the bandstand. Yorkshire, of course, is famous for its brass bands, but there are quite a few in this part of the country that regularly perform at the famous Pleasure Gardens bandstand in Bournemouth. I therefore support the proposal of Councillor Patricia Stallard that Winchester should have an art-designed portable bandstand to accommodate live performances from bands and art groups. In Chronicle, October the 4th. The city used to have a bandstand approximately on the site of the River Park Leisure Centre, but this disappeared many years ago. Eastleigh and Romsey have bandstands as a permanent fixture, but it's a good idea to have one that could be moved to various areas in the city. As well as the Cathedral Close, presumably on the site of the annual ice rink, other possible sites are the Arbour, Abbey Grounds, and the park where the bonfire celebrations are held every November. Councillor Keith Wood said at the council meeting that it wouldn't cost a fortune, and Winchester does lack this facility. I hope that Councillor Stallard will get the support of her fellow councillors over her proposal, and that we will hear Strike Up the Band and other famous songs from musicals and some classical music too. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Here's praise for the Hampshire Chronicle from P.F. Carter. Long may the Chronicle prosper. Sir, I was a Fleet Street journalist for 30 years and consider myself a connoisseur of newspapers. On passing through Winchester the other week, I picked up a copy of the Chronicle at the railway station. At risk of being accused of manoeuvring for an order of the brown nose, may I congratulate the editor, Keith Redbourne, and his team for an excellent September the 27th issue. We hear a lot about the supposed death of the press, but your paper seems in good health. It was full of interesting, well-written stories, lots of human interest. The Twyford couple able to return home, weightier stories, Barton Farm, court coverage, many excellent photographs, crisp design, a lively letters page, and then a superb art supplement. And for just 70p. A bargain. Congrats on the 240th anniversary. I think you will be around for a long time yet. P.F. Carter, High Wycombe Bucks, and the editor's note at the bottom says, no money was exchanged for this much appreciated and genuine correspondence.
And Peter Hargreaves asks, jobs for the military boys. Sir, it looks as though the position of police and crime commissioners are becoming a job for the military boys, but not for the girls. Of the 36 regions in England being contested by the Tory party, only 3 female candidates were selected, while the Labour party, contesting 37 regions, selected 11 female candidates. The Lib Dems don't seem interested in crime as they are only contesting 12 regions. Last week, October the 4th, the Chronicle reported that Michael Mates, a former military officer, the Tory candidate for Hampshire, has selected another military officer to be his running mate and will appoint him his deputy if he is elected. Commissioners will have the option whether or not to appoint a deputy, which is not necessary, as the commissioner will also have a chief executive and a finance director to assist him. So why is Mates subjecting Hampshire Council taxpayers to the unnecessary expense of employing a deputy? Or is it that, as he will be serving as police and crime commissioner well into his 80s, an age when most persons are vulnerable health-wise, that he is going to need the services of a deputy to take the strain? In which case, should he be standing for this position when it will clearly be very demanding? Then there is the question of why Lieutenant Colonel Branigan has been selected to be the deputy commissioner and not the female candidate who was runner-up to Michael Mates in the selection process, in which Lieutenant Colonel Branigan was behind in third place. Hampshire, where is your voice? Peter Hargraves, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
Elizabeth Harrison says, embrace new tech before it's too late. Sir, how disappointing it was to read in the Chronicle of October the 4th the reactionary response to the possibility of a wind farm at Sutton Scotney that could provide a third of Winchester's electricity requirements. This was especially poignant as it was on the same day as the announcement that this country will be at much greater risk of severe energy shortage, indeed of possible blackout by 2015, with the shutdown of old power stations such as Didcot. This is no small risk, but statistics can be difficult to understand. My husband and I visited the Ecotech Centre near Swaffham in Norfolk a couple of weeks ago. It's possible to climb a wind turbine there, but more importantly, one can stand very close to it, minimal sound and much less than the nearby road. Also, I put my ear to the stem of the turbine, almost no sound at all. Local people told us that they think the turbines are beautiful and they're proud of them. They also have security of energy supply. We are fortunate enough to have solar panels at home and are excited to see how much we are contributing to the national grid. Isn't it time to embrace new technologies before we all plough into winters without power? Elizabeth Harrison, Bourne Lane, Twyford.
Roger Thompson writes, M3 extension was a boon for the city. Sir, Winchester is very fortunate that the Twyford Down protesters failed to stop the M3 development. When I opened my business here in the 1970s, the bypass was one of the most dangerous and congested sections of highway in southern England. I personally knew 3 people who lost their lives on that section of road. To add to that, there were frequent jams in Winchester, as vehicles, including lorries, used the city as a rat run in an attempt to avoid the bypass. Since the M3 was completed, Winchester has been free of very heavy traffic. The accident rate has plummeted, and pedestrians across from the city to St Catherine's area of the Downs is greatly improved and doesn't involve crossing a busy dual carriageway. Of course, it would have been even better had there been a tunnel. Full marks should be given to the authorities who stood up to the massive pressure exerted by the protesters and the media. Roger Thompson, Clarendon Way, Winchester.
And a letter from A. Westlake about planning. Sir, in the Hampshire Chronicle of September the 20th, Councillor Ian Tate said, regarding the building of council homes, there is a robust planning process and there will certainly be public consultation on the plans. Only recently, as reported in the Chronicle, he categorically stated that housing would be built on the land next to Simmons Court, constructed by Radon Homes. No plans have been presented. Has he arranged to circumvent this robust planning process and decided already to ignore any public consultation? We wait and see. A. Westlake, Courtney Road, Winchester.
Judith Martin says, another tranche of city's precious green setting destroyed. How pertinent to have Barton Farm decision on your front page, side by side with the event marking 20 years since the Twyford Down campaign, Chronicle, October the 4th. I recall that in February 1992, I appeared on the front page of the Telegraph, holding a large banner at one of the many demonstrations. The banner, Stop the Tory Canyon, was awkward to hold, as it had been made for two people. When the press photographer appeared, my fellow protester thrust his end of it into my hand and disappeared. That protester was George Beckett. The Twyford Down article appeared in another local paper, showing me holding the banner, but at that moment with Chris Gillam, who made it. In those days, before he became a city councillor, Mr. Beckett was concerned about the impact of the new road on his village and his business. He even donated trees planted by children, including his daughter's and mine, from All Saints Compton School on land planned for the road. Now, with the Barton Farm decision, another tranche of Winchester's precious green setting will be destroyed. The principal reason given is that the site was already included in the draft local development framework. And who ensured that that was the case? The same bold environmental campaigner, George Beckett. Backed up by councillors from the southern parishes, though not by most of Winchester City ones, or even by his own party's MP, he sealed the fate of Barton Farm. Poor Steve Brine, stitched up by his own party to give credence to the entirely baseless beliefs of his chancellor that it is planning that is holding back economic recovery. How much more will the Conservatives fail to conserve before the next election? Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And another letter by Jay Jennings about Barton Farm. Sir, as a lifelong Winchester resident, I was naturally dismayed and saddened at the news that Barton Farm development has been given the green light. I feel I have to make a few points that need to be raised about this news. Since 1995, when the proposal first came to our attention, many hundreds of infill and brownfield sites around Winchester have been developed. So do we still need as many as 2,000 dwellings at Barton Farm? Does Winchester have the infrastructure to cope with the influx of population? No, in my opinion. If this goes ahead, we will need the Silver Hill Renaissance, the leisure centre needs completely sorting out, and the RHCH and secondary school capacity is also under strain. The architectural heritage of Winchester is undoubted, so what of this new development? Nothing short of the architectural integrity of Poundbury near Dorchester would do Winchester justice. But I fear that it'll just be a sea of red brick, dullard rabbit hutches as far as the eye can see, as if someone has tractor-beamed a slice of Hatch Warren, Basingstoke, into our once green and pleasant land. What an eyesore to welcome visitors to the city. On a final point, were we not all indoctrinated into the idea that greenfield developments are off the agenda and that brownfield sites were the only way to go? Without doubt, Winchester needs to do her bit, but 2,000 homes all at once? If Carla Holmes have deep pockets, perhaps they can make a sizeable donation to the Cathedral Fund as recompense. J. Jennings, Church Lane, Colden Common.
And still on Barton Farm, Claudia Goss writes, Sir, given the shortage of housing in the area and the government's promise on house building and stimulating the economy, it seems that Eric Pickles had little political choice but to approve the development at Barton Farm. The anger of local residents at having a development of this scale forced on them at national level is justifiable, but it's not just happening in Winchester. There is a national shortage of housing and an ongoing loss of farmland to develop. 11,000 hectares were developed between 2001 and 2009, and that comes from the Department for Communities and Local Government 2011. Impacting on food security, natural habitat and landscapes. So what is driving this universally unpopular and unsustainable demand for land and homes? It's unsustainable population growth. Claudia Goss, Hatherley Road, Winchester.
Yes, KJ Barrett says there's plenty of money to build more roads. Sir, 20 years have passed since the protests at Twyford Down raised awareness of the greatest road building programme since the Romans. Unfortunately, things have turned full circle. Then, as now, a weak, unpopular government is in power. The country again is in recession, unemployment is high, and the government is planning to spend billions of pounds on new roads. 45 schemes have been approved by the Department of Transport. The £100 million Bexhill-Hastings link is the worst in terms of estimated carbon emissions. The reason for this newfound enthusiasm, while crucial public services are being cut, is unclear. But what can be expected from a true blue government mixed with yellow, which claims to be the greenest ever? KJ Barrett, Stuart Crescent, Stanmore.
And another letter about Barton Farm from Mrs. Bruty. Sir, your paper, October the 4th, describes the handing over of Barton Farm to Carla Holmes as the end of the road, and it could be just that for cyclists in Winchester. One of Carla Holmes' principal justifications is that people on the new estate would use alternative transport because it is ideally located to encourage easy access to the city centre by bicycle and on foot, being close to a number of existing cycle routes and footpaths. But although it is true that leisure cycling has increased, there is no hard evidence to support the assertion that there has been, or will be, any significant modal change in transport away from the motor car. When I asked Mike Emmett, the director of Carla, 10 years ago, how this would be accomplished, he told me it was something that could be dealt with when the time comes. The time is now, and I still have no idea how cyclists in large numbers will move around the city safely and easily. In the last decade, hundreds of houses have been built along all its main roads. Worthy Road is no longer that quiet road where cyclists had a first-class cycle path from Kingsworthy to Abbots Barton. I have been cycling in Winchester for over 50 years, but now find it difficult to cross the road to start my journey into town because of the increased traffic in both directions. Cars from the new development adjacent to Francis Gardens and new council houses planned for Abbots Barton can only make things worse. 90 new houses at Francis Gardens did not exist when Carla Holmes drew up their plans. Winchester City is not cyclist-friendly and never can be, no matter how the developers draw up their plans. Mrs. V. E. Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
And that finishes Letters to the Editor. Thank you to all those concerned. And now it's time for your say. We ask passers-by, do you agree with the government's backing to build 2,000 homes on Barton Farm? Noel has the answers.
Well, Robert Emmonson, 83, retired university lecturer from Shawford, said, I think it was inevitable. It's sad in a way, but it's a measure which had to be grasped, and it's been going on so long it needed to be settled. And Michael Naidu, 26, a chef of Ploughway Badger Farm, said, if people need more houses, then it's a good thing. It might get a few people opposing it, but it's better if you're serving the majority. Alexander Somerville, 65, a retired insurance worker of Christchurch Road, Winchester, said, traffic is bad enough in Winchester as it is, without putting in more houses and bringing in more people. It's a serious worry in this town, and there must be other areas suitable for development. And Kathy Blackburn, 44, clinic manager of Alsford Road in Winchester, said, I don't think throwing up lots of houses is the answer to Winchester's problems. In any case, there are plenty of empty buildings that could be used instead.
And now we're going to go back... excuse me. Now we're going to go back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Sheila.
25 years ago, 1987, a witness for the Countryside Commission told the M3 inquiry that the proposed route for the motorway would totally disfigure the southwestern face of Twyford Down. Mark Lintell, a land use consultant, said a route along the existing bypass would be vastly superior and described the landscape around Winchester, including the city itself, as possibly one of the loveliest stretch of countryside in England, reflected in the variety of national and local conservation designations. Secondly, 25 years ago, in a decision which could have implications for other out-of-town shopping proposals, Environment Secretary Nicholas Ridley has rejected plans for a retail park at Hedge End because of its impact on the green gap between Hedge End and Southampton. Peachy Property Corporation appealed against Eastleigh Council's refusal of outline permission for the retail park and access road at Wildhurn.
And Clare's going back 50 years.
1962. Commenting on the fact that 1,306 of the 1,462 registered blind people in Hampshire are graded as unemployable, Mr. T.H. Lowndes told the annual meeting of the Hampshire Association for the Care of the Blind at Winchester on Friday that the vast number so regarded presented a challenge, especially as the classification included not only the elderly, but also those who, for some physical, domestic or other reason, could not be gainfully employed. And the second item, County Education Officer Mr. R. M. Marsh came under fire at a brains trust in the Assembly Rooms, Alton, on Wednesday on the question of grammar school places. There was an interruption from the floor and questions had to be suppressed by Chairman the Reverend R. A. Dacre. Mr. Marsh stuck to his support of the present method, saying some sort of selection was necessary. With regard to Alton, he said it was in keeping with the rest of the county.
And going back to 100 years ago, Neil.
Yes, two items from 1912. The Mayor and Mayoress of Winchester, Councillor and Mrs. Holdaway, were kindly arranging an entertainment for aged people at the Guildhall next Wednesday afternoon. About 300 invitations have been issued to men and women whose ages vary from 60 to 70, or thereabouts. Tea will be served at 4 o'clock, and from 5.15 till 8 o'clock there is to be an entertainment. And the other piece from Winchester Bench. Winchester Bench before W.H. Jacob and W.J. Madison Esquires. George Dalton, labourer of Middlebrook Street, and Frederick Blake, labourer, Greyfriars Terrace, Lower Brook Street, were charged with stealing lead piping, property of Mr. John Hunt. Henry Wood of Gosport, a plumber in the employ of Mr. Hunt, also of Gosport, said he was carrying out drainage work at the Winchester Workhouse. The lead produced formed part of a quantity of old lead which had been removed in the course of the work.
And way back 200 years ago, Sheila?
200 years ago, 1812. A dispatch is received by Viscount Castlereagh, His Majesty's Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, from Viscount Cathcart, Ambassador Extraordinary to the Court of the Emperor of All the Russians, St. Petersburg, September the 13th. My Lord, I am happy to announce that the arms of His Imperial Majesty have been victorious in a most obstinate and general action fought on the 7th of September at the village of Borodino on the great road from Smolensk to Moscow. And secondly, at the close of the hustings in Covent Garden, the populace were about to exercise their prerogative of pulling down and carrying off the fabric. One of the Westminster Committee, however, said everything was paid for by subscription among the electors, and that the saving of the materials would be a diminution of the expense. This reasonable appeal had the proper effect, and the carpenters were permitted to take down the hustings quietly.
Now, Noel has got editorial comment.
Yes, marking the past but looking to the future. Doommongers have long since predicted the demise of local newspapers. So excuse us on this one occasion if we blow our own trumpet. This week's 240th anniversary supplement can only scratch at the surface of the wealth of news and information the Chronicle has provided to its readers throughout its long and proud past. Our back copies are a treasure trove of social and political history. However, there is no doubt that the regional press is facing its biggest challenge. But the Chronicle is confronting that challenge head on. We are constantly evolving as we adapt to bring our readers and advertisers the services they demand in this fast-moving technological age, be it in print, online, on your mobile phone or other handheld device. The Chronicle is reaching out to more people than ever before. But print remains the most popular way for the vast majority of our readers to get their weekly fix of local news, comment, leisure, sport and more. Despite increasing competition, there is no credible, tried and trusted, all-encompassing alternative to what the Hampshire Chronicle still provides. For that reason alone, and while not in any way complacent, we are confident that the Chronicle has a bright future.
Now it's time for First Person, read by Sheila.
First Person is written by George Hayter and entitled, How's About the Rumours, Then? I can get into the Beeb buildings, that is the BBC, whenever I want now that I'm 60. For a dozen years I worked for the BBC and paid into the corporation's pension plan. Now I'm a BBC pensioner and my application for a pensioner pass has been successful. Last week I used the ID card to take my daughter on a tour of Television Centre in London, where I toiled in the graphic design department throughout the 1980s. It was very busy then, with its 8 big studios and 4 tiny ones in use all the time. After one programme finished, scene shifters would arrive within minutes to dismantle the set, before the repainting the floor and setting up the next show. Today the studios stand empty most of the time, because dramas are being made on location instead, and many studio productions have been moved to Manchester. In July, TV Centre was sold and production there is expected to cease entirely within the next year or so. So visiting the huge complex was a bit bleak, though still exciting. I was telling my daughter how it used to be, with the corridors full of busy people and famous faces. One of those faces belonged to Jimmy Savile. The immensely popular DJ loved for his eccentric manner and admired for his endless charity work, has been posthumously accused of molesting young girls. Complainants say somersaults took place on BBC premises. As an employee, I never heard the rumours of Savile's alleged criminal behaviour, despite working in the Top of the Pops studio regularly. Off duty, I was once in the Top of the Pops audience when Savile was presenting. Charismatic on TV, he was a remote character in reality. Audience members chatted to the programme's other presenters during recording breaks, but Savile seemed to have "no go" written around him. He was a loner who only came to life for the red light above the camera lens. It was later in Hampshire that I did hear a rumour. I was retraining as a journalist at Highbury College in Portsmouth, and a lecturer told me Savile was a paedophile. Some people may feel outraged that the star was allowed to get away with his apparent misbehaviour by relying on the reluctance of victims to testify and by hiding behind the law of defamation and libel. On the other hand, his supporters will be indignant that the accusations have come only now that Savile is dead and no longer able to defend himself. The law pretty much says you can say what you like about a person once that person is dead. And that reminds me, my Hampshire journalism lecturer told me of another dynamite paedophile rumour about a former government minister. The ex-minister is still alive, so because of fear of costly libel damages, I can say no more for now.
And now we continue with items of general news, beginning with Claire.
Businesses urged to place their BID vote. Winchester City Centre businesses are currently voting in the crucial poll that will determine the future of the Winchester Business Improvement District, BID. Some 824 letters have been posted out by Winchester City Council to BID members since the poll opened on September 27th. Poll closes on October the 25th at 5 p.m. with the results the next day. Local businesses are encouraging other businesses to take part and vote to secure another 5 years' worth of funding for the city. Mandy McCartney, owner of Pavilion in the Square, said, "Once you've experienced how the BID can work, you wouldn't want to run a city any other way. The BID has been an excellent way for businesses to help promote and shape the future of the city. Ultimately, Winchester has grown at a time when many cities have been in decline, and although it has been hard work, there have been many rewarding outcomes. It would be a real shame if businesses didn't vote." Winchester BID has been in operation since April 2008 and has delivered several projects including better cleaning, crime reduction, marketing and waste management. Tony Mawson, owner of Mawson & Company, added, "Having been a business in Winchester for the past 18 years, I can see the transformation the BID has created in the city centre. The streets are cleaner and more attractive. We have more police presence. But more importantly, the businesses talk more to one another and create a larger voice for representation through the BID. For these reasons and for many more, I'm backing the BID. Chris Turner, Executive Director of the BID, said Winchester has just enjoyed a bumper Saturday with some shops, including Pavilions, reporting their best trade of the year. And this is accompanied by a photograph of these three people, Tony Mawson from Mawson & Company, Mandy McCartney from Pavilion, and Graham Compton Price from Jones the Bootmaker.
Janet celebrates 25 years. A primary school teaching assistant is celebrating 25 years working at the same school near Winchester. Pupils, parents and staff at Oslebury Primary School helped Janet Emery celebrate her silver anniversary. She started at the school in 1987 to support a boy who was being integrated into mainstream education after a year at special school. Janet said, "It was something I'd never done before and I was up for a challenge. I stayed with him right until he left Oslebury, until he was 11. And I progressed with other children, including one who was deaf. Since then, I've continued working with children who need extra support with their learning, which I just love." Head teacher Elena Ponson added, "Mrs. Emery has been very loyal to Oslebury and its pupils and is very dedicated to her one-to-one support role. It was lovely to celebrate her achievement at our weekly celebration assembly in front of our pupils and their parents. And there's a lovely picture of Mrs. Emery clutching a huge bouquet of flowers, surrounded by smiling children."
And an article about Barton Farm. Campaign group determined to carry on the fight. "The battle is lost, but the war goes on," says the leader of the campaign against Barton Farm. Gavin Blackman, chairman of the Save Barton Farm group, is bitterly disappointed at the decision by Secretary of State Eric Pickles to allow the 2,000 homes scheme. He says the group will be taking legal advice on what avenues remain to block the scheme, where construction could start in 2013. Mr. Blackman revealed the group is 75% certain to seek a judicial review of the Pickles decision, with a deadline for the decision within 3 months. He said he believes this could freeze the planning approval, although a city council spokeswoman disputed this. She said, "It does not stop anything because it is only dealing with the process, not about the rights or wrongs of the scheme itself. The consent has been granted." Mr. Blackman said he was surprised at the timing of the government decision, coming just 3 weeks before a public inquiry starts at Winchester Guildhall on October the 30th into the new Winchester local plan. "I would have thought he, Pickles, would have waited, because now the planning inspector has this hanging over his head." The group will attempt to undermine the proposed local plan at the two-week inquiry. Mr. Blackman disputes the figure of 4,000 homes needed over the next 20 years in the Winchester town area, and 11,000 across the city council district as a whole. His group will attempt to persuade the inquiry inspector to reject the local plan and so potentially jeopardise the approval of Barton Farm. "We want the inspector to say to the City Council, you need to go back and start again. Nationally, we need to have policies that better protect places like Winchester." A criticism of the Save Barton Farm group is that it ignores the pressing need for homes, but Mr. Blackman said housing need could be met without major greenfield development. "There will be windfall sites coming along, an issue that the City Council has ignored, and recently a Winchester-based architect, Snug Projects, showed how hundreds of homes could be built in an area such as Bar End." And this is accompanied by a picture of Gavin Blackman and a picture of Barton Farm.
Here's another story about awards. A Winchester charity worker has been given a prestigious award by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire. Myra Clare, Chairman and Volunteer for Parkinson's UK Winchester, was awarded the British Empire Medal, BEM, Civil Division, by Dame Mary Fagan at a ceremony in Winchester. She was one of several Hampshire residents to be awarded the medal, including Peter Mills, who was rewarded for his work with the Alsford and District Agricultural Society's annual show. King Somborne's scout leader and school volunteer, Janice Waterman, was also presented with the BEM at the Winchester Guildhall event. The Lord Lieutenant also gave meritorious service awards to members of the Reserve Forces and Cadets, Royal Humane Society awards to all members of Hampshire Police and Civilians, and commission certificates to the new Deputy Lieutenants. The Lord Lieutenant's cadets were also appointed and presentations made to outgoing cadets. There's a photograph here of people who have received medals, and I'll read the names out and I hope I don't duplicate what I've read. Richard Bennion for charitable services in Liphook. Michael Chalk for services to Havant Rugby Football Club. Brendan Gibb Gray for services to the community in Emsworth. Azalea Gosling for voluntary service to the British Red Cross in Southampton. Mary Moss for services to people with hearing impairment and fundraiser in Hampshire. Michael Trapod for services to the community in Shalden. And Janice Waterman for services to young people, scout leader and school volunteer, King Somborne.
Have your say on town's future. You decide. That is the rallying call in Bishop's Waltham as the parish council starts to ask residents how the town will change in the next 20 years. Around 100 people helped kick-start the exercise when the parish council staged the public consultation at Jubilee Hall last Saturday. The town has been told by the city council that it must absorb around 400 to 500 homes in the period to 2031, a potentially highly controversial issue, as in other places, notably at Barton Farm. Councillor Robert Shield, chairman of the Neighbourhood Plan Steering Group, said 43 people would like to get involved in joining focus groups to discuss the issues. He said, "It went very well. We were pleasantly surprised with the numbers and the interest and the willingness to participate." Councillor Peter Stokes added, "It's early days. We're keeping an open mind and we're trying to get as many people involved as possible. For this to work, we need to really engage with the community." A major meeting on November the 14th at Jubilee Hall from 3 to 7pm will see the council encouraging people to definitely say where new houses should go in and around the town. Councillor Shield said, "People will not be allowed to say, 'I don't want any houses.' Everyone has to make a positive comment. We, the council, have no plan at all. It is the community that is going to decide." Bishop's Waltham sits on the southern edge of the South Downs National Park, so development to the north is unlikely. Civic chiefs in Bishop's Waltham are going down a different path to Alsford, where the town council drew up proposals, including relocating Perrin School, the Dean Industrial Estate, and the houses to the farmland on the eastern edge of the town off Sun Lane. A packed public meeting in May was largely critical of the ideas. At Bishop's Waltham, the council hopes that involving the public at the earlier stages will attract an earlier consensus. The council hopes it will have drawn up its plans by the end of 2013.
Concert raises some brass. 15-year-old Dermot MacDonald was among the musicians to show off their talents at a prom-style performance by Test Valley Brass. The Test Valley School, Stockbridge, pupil impressed with his skills on the bagpipes. The group gave their rendition of Rule Britannia to more than 150 people to raise funds for the St Mary's Church and Andover Rebuild. The Rebuild Together campaign, alongside Highland Cathedral, a popular Scottish anthem used in the film Four Weddings and a Funeral. Performers included professionals and local talent from across Test Valley, who performed Edward Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance March No. 1 and Hubert Parry's Jerusalem, while audience members waved flags and sang along. Donations have exceeded £2,000, which will be put towards helping to secure the church's future, including funding essential repairs to the heating system, the organ and the roof. And this is accompanied by a very colourful photograph of the band and the choir in St Mary's Church, Andover.
Barton Farm will bring 8,000 jobs, bonanza. Barton Farm is set to give Winchester a huge jobs boost and a cash windfall for the City Council, according to the development boss. Mike Emmett, director of Carla Homes, says the huge scheme, given outline planning permission by the government last Tuesday, will create thousands of jobs, and the 2,000 homes will net Winchester City Council some £20 million in a new homes bonus. Mr. Emmett was speaking the day after Secretary of State Eric Pickles gave the controversial go-ahead for the scheme, which first surfaced in the mid-1990s. He said he could not be precise about numbers, but the House Builders Federation estimates that four jobs are created for every house built, from the initial groundwork to jobs provided when the scheme is completed. If that formula proves accurate, then some 8,000 jobs could be created over the course of the build and when the area is finished. Carla plans to build a primary school, food store, community building, health centre, 600-bedroom nursing home, a district energy centre, park and ride for up to 200 cars and allotments. Mr. Emmett said the infrastructure such as schools and health centre would be amongst the first to be built. First, Carla must get detailed planning permission, but that is now likely to be a formality. Mr. Emmett said the detailed application was unlikely this year, but he hoped for full planning permission by mid-2013, builders on site later next year, and the first homes completed in 2014. There will be plenty of jobs for local people, he said. We have already had inquiries from them. This will create a huge number of jobs directly on the actual building and in the supply chain, and then, when it is completed, in the services such as the schools and the health centre. We seek local subcontractors, and all our construction staff are subcontractors. This will not be a 12-month build. We expect it will last 12 years. Mr. Emmett disputed that Barton Farm would put a burden on local infrastructure. We are largely self-supporting. The infrastructure will be provided on site and paid for by us, so we do not put a burden on local facilities. The City Council will receive a new homes bonus from the government, which will be able to invest in community facilities across the city, actually improving the infrastructure.
Disquiet on menu. A celebrity chef's plan for a new Winchester restaurant has been met with mixed reactions from nearby residents. Hugh Fernley Whittingstall has signed a lease to take over the historic council-owned Abbey Mill off Colebrook Street. But residents are divided over the benefits of the River Cottage restaurant to the area. One resident, who asked not to be named, said, "I think it's great to have a new business in Winchester, and we've always welcomed that, but it's a residential street and you wouldn't put a pub there. We have elderly people and school-aged children on this street, while there are lots of empty spaces on the high street." Another resident, who also preferred not to be named, added, "Huge trucks come down this street and have damaged the front of my house before and made the building shake. What will happen now this is coming in and all the delivery trucks come down here?" But Nikki Simon, full-time mum of Colebrook Street, said, "I think it will be great for the building and good to have a bit of life down this street. There are obvious concerns about parking and deliveries, but I think it will be positive so long as it is well managed." And Maria Cable, who's the warden of the Quaker Meeting House, added, "It will add to an area that has been unused for so many years, and a restaurant could be a good thing to have here. My only concern would be parking." River Cottage will be organising a meeting with residents to discuss the plans in the near future.
Raise a glass to Cecile's wine classes. A new wine school is opening in Winchester next week. Champagne expert Cecile Bergard is launching Hampshire Wine School on Thursday. It will offer 4- and 8-week courses where people can learn more about wines and regions, while there will also be regular evening and weekend tasting events. The business is part of the local wine school network of independent schools across the country. Cecile of Eastleigh said, "Wines are such a passion of mine that I find sharing that first-hand experience very rewarding. I want to make discovering and understanding wines accessible to everyone and a thoroughly enjoyable way to spend an evening." The first event will be held at Bar No. 5, Bridge Street, at 7 p.m. Cecile is also opening a school in Southampton at the White Star Tavern in Oxford Street from Friday next week. For more details, visit HampshireWineSchool.com. www.thebookshop.com. And this is accompanied by a picture of Cecile raising a glass of wine.
Tackling school bullies. The Olympics and Paralympics may be over, but its legacy lives on in tackling school bullies. That's the message from county education chiefs who are hosting an anti-bullying conference this week at the council's Winchester headquarters. The aim is to consider how Olympic ideals such as courage, respect, equality and friendship can be used to combat bullying. Some 75 pupils aged between 10 and 16 are expected to attend, representing 34 schools and colleges. The conference's themes include exclusion due to disability, religion and homosexuality, as well as cyberbullying. The conference will include presentations from Alex Dicker and Harry Elsmore, pupils at the Westgate School in Winchester. Councillor Roy Perry, Executive Lead Member for Children's Services, said, "Sadly, bullying is something which can be encountered in all walks of life, and we as a county council want to equip young people and our schools with the mechanisms and strategies with which they can tackle it." He added, "The success of this conference lies in children, young people and adults going back to their schools and wider communities and putting into practice what they have learned from the exchange of their ideas and experiences at the conference."
Time to break the school run habit. Hampshire primary schools have been taking part in an inter-school scooter challenge to try to win a scooter pod. The challenge, which ends today, is being held during International Walk to School Month, with the aim of getting as many school children scooting to and from school during the two-week period. The one with the highest average number of pupils scooting will win scooter parking equipment worth £460. According to national charity Living Streets, walking or scooting to school is time well spent. 90% of parents who walk to school said that spending quality time with their children was one of their top priorities, and over a third said that the journey to school is where they find out the most about their children's life. The most recent National School Census, 2010, revealed that around a third of school children are driven to school. The Hampshire Hands Up survey in 2010 showed that 61,667 cars either do a longer route or travel during peak periods, adding to congestion due to taking children to school. As well as leading to fewer cars on the road, walking, scooting or cycling to school can go a long way to achieving the Department of Health's recommended target of 60 minutes exercise a day for school children. It can also help build confidence and contribute to the development of a child's independence. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Mel Kendall, said, "In the UK, over half of primary school children do not walk to school regularly. This is unavoidable in some cases, but being driven to school means that children do not learn valuable lessons about road safety and how to keep themselves safe." The Scooter Challenge is part of Hampshire County Council's My Journey travel awareness campaign to encourage people to consider their travel options for everyday journeys. Leaving the car at home can save people money, improve their fitness, and help reduce congestion and carbon emissions. There are 535 schools in Hampshire, with around 184,000 pupils making the journey to school each day across the county.
Crumble Rumble is so appealing. Pupils from two schools near Alsford raced against the clock to see which team could make the fastest apple crumble. The youngsters, aged 10 and 11, from West Meon and Four Marks primary schools, were invited by staff at the National Trust property at Hinton Ampner, near Bramdean, to take part in their Crumble Rumble event. The race saw them rush into the historic walled garden to pick old apple varieties before returning to the kitchens to peel and slice the fruit, make the crumble, and pop their puddings into the oven. The competition was extremely close, with Four Marks the eventual winners, getting their crumble into the oven in 13 minutes flat. Louise Washington, Hinton Ampner's Assistant Visitor Services Officer, said, "The speed and teamwork that these children displayed was incredibly impressive. It's a shame that pudding making isn't an Olympic sport." Whilst the crumbles were baking, the children enjoyed a special apple-related trail around the gardens, before being treated to a private tour of the kitchen garden by head gardener John Wood and his assistant James Sylvester. The Crumble Rumble is part of the National Trust's Food, Glorious Food campaign, which celebrates and encourages the growing and eating of local seasonal food. And this is accompanied by a picture of the children clutching or throwing apples with Hinton Ampner's head gardener, John Wood.
Still on the subject of fruit, celebrating the fruits of Hampshire countryside. The fruits of the Hampshire countryside were brought into the heart of the city over the weekend in Winchester. The cathedral hosted a three-day festival that celebrated the annual harvest and attracted large crowds. A tractor took surreal centre stage by the west door. There was Morris dancing, rides around the close in a Suffolk Punch horse-drawn wagon, numerous country-themed displays, farm animals including birds of prey from Lainston House, and music from the Southampton Concert Wind Band. The Dean, the Very Reverend James Atwell, a farmer's son, introduced the festival in 2007. He said he was keen to reconnect farming with the urban life and was delighted by the success of the event. The Dean said, "The sun is shining, the harvest is in, and there is a sense of joy. It has become a really good family day out without incurring expense, unless they are tempted by the farmer's market." Joy Waldron of Beechcroft Farm, which produces beef, pork and lamb at Crabwood near Winchester, was running a stall at the farmer's market on Cathedral Green. She said, "It is a lovely atmosphere and nice to have the opportunity to speak to folk." On Sunday, the Dean hosted a two-course harvest lunch made using fresh, seasonal, local produce with guest speaker Julian Gibbons, chairman of Hampshire National Farmers Union. Mr. Gibbons said, "The National Farmers Union is delighted to join in celebrating the importance of agriculture to Hampshire and giving thanks for what farming delivers to each and every one of us at harvest time." This is accompanied by several photographs. One is a large photograph of a market stall. There's another photograph of three little children, each holding some of what they've bought or been given. Lettuces, baked beans, cheese, and another one of a bread stall.
Book borrowing up for the first time in 14 years. Trips to the library and book borrowing in Hampshire are both on the increase for the first time in 14 years, the latest figures show. The number of books borrowed at 51 county-run libraries is up by 4% to 6.7 million in 2011-12, compared with the previous 12 months. And the number of visitors has also increased by 2% to 6.4 million over the same period, showing trips to the library are not a thing of the past. Children are behind the rise in borrowing. Statistics supplied by the local authority showed the number of children's books taken out from libraries across the county increased by 15% over the last year to 2.4 million. By comparison, books borrowed by adults showed no change at 4.3 million. The rise in borrowing comes despite the council reinstating fines for the late return of children's books in September 2011, which critics said could put youngsters off reading. However, county chiefs said the aim was to encourage the prompt return of library books, so there were more titles on shelves to borrow. Figures also show the number of e-books issued increased from 31,927 in 2010-11 to 53,276 in 2011-12. Winchester Discovery Centre retains its crown as the county's most successful library, with nearly 500,000 people through its doors over the last year and 384,000 items borrowed.
Pub raises a glass to celebrate Chronicle milestone. The Hampshire Chronicle has toasted its 240th birthday with its very own beer. Winchester Pub, the Full Flood Arms, has teamed up with the Chronicle to produce Full Flood 1772, which refers to the year the paper was founded. This is a 4.2% ale. It is made from Challenger and Progress hops and four different malts to give it a biscuit flavour and traditional dark brown colour. Landlord Andy Mansell said, "The beer took 3 weeks to brew, during which time it was boiled, chilled, fermented, and then conditioned in casks. He added, both he and fellow publican Dad Clive were delighted to be able to celebrate the Chronicle's birthday by producing the special brew. Andy said, it's absolutely brilliant. The Hampshire Chronicle has supported us over the years with our charity events, and when we set up our brewery, the Chronicle came along to help us promote it. We are a community pub, and the Chronicle is a great community paper, and you'll always find a copy of it here in the pub. We want to wish the Hampshire Chronicle a very happy birthday. Chronicle editor Keith Redbourne joined Andy and pub regulars for a sneak taste of the beer. He said, we're so grateful to Andy and Clive for helping us celebrate the paper's birthday. And the great thing is all our readers can try the beer for free by cutting out a coupon in this week's paper and redeeming it at either the Full Flood Arms or Queen Inn pubs in Winchester. There are a raft of other exclusive reader offers in this week's paper as part of the anniversary celebrations. And this is accompanied by a picture of the editor, Keith Redbourne, with the landlord, Andy Mansell, and raising their glasses of the new Full Flood 1772 specially brewed ale.
Routine call-out, a matter of life and death. It was a routine call-out that turned into a battle to save a man's life. Now, Hampshire policeman PC David Hollins has been given a prestigious award for the vital role he played in resuscitating cardiac arrest victim Philip Simpson. PC Hollins, who is based at Hedge End Police Station, had received what he believed to be a normal call-out. The ambulance service had asked him to take charge of a young boy because the person who was looking after him had been taken ill. But when he arrived at Mr. Simpson's home in Chandler's Ford, he came across a very different situation. He said, I was with a colleague and we got a call to go and assist the ambulance service because someone was having an asthma attack and they had an 11-year-old child with them who didn't want to go to hospital. But when we got there, a paramedic was rushing around the ambulance and inside there was another paramedic on the floor trying to do the CPR and breathing on his own. While paramedics rushed to get a defibrillator to revive Mr. Simpson, PC Hollins took over the chest compressions. On the third round, I felt his heart start beating again and he started breathing, PC Hollins said. Medics are still not sure what caused Mr. Simpson's heart to stop, but he has since made a complete recovery. PC Hollins' part in saving Mr. Simpson's life has now been recognised by the Royal Humane Society, which has awarded him a top national life-saving honour after he was nominated by a sergeant. PC Hollins said, I just feel like I haven't done anything that anyone else wouldn't have done, but it does show how diverse the job is. Mr. Simpson, 30, said he is very grateful for PC Hollins' actions that day. Mr. Simpson said, I don't remember anything. I just woke up in hospital and PC Hollins was there when I woke up. I didn't know what had happened and I just asked why I was there and fell back to sleep. I'm pleased he's got the award. He saved my life. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Mr. Simpson and PC Hollins, both looking very happy and very healthy.
Dominique's enjoying her brush with fame. Terrible pun. A company from Ovington near Alsford that produces and sells dental products for babies, including chewable toothbrushes, has been highly commended in a National Business Awards competition. The awards were judged by a panel of leading business figures, including UK businesswoman and star of BBC One's The Apprentice, Karen Brady. Dominique Tillon, the company founder, entered Brush Baby into the Innovation of the Year category at the Nectar Business Small Business Awards. She impressed the judges so much, they highly commended her firm, earning the company 50,000 Nectar points and a seat at a prestigious business roundtable event with Karen Brady. Brush Baby was inspired by Dominique's baby girl, Lulu, who constantly chewed her toothbrush. Unable to find a product that addressed this problem, and after much research, Dominique invented her own. Following its success, Dominique extended the range to 6 novel products, including dental wipes and xylitol and fluoride toothpastes, stocked in a range of high street retailers, including Waitrose, John Lewis, Mothercare and Sainsbury's. Karen Brady said, Brush Baby is a very inspirational company. Creating a work-life balance is hard enough, but finding the time to start a business while looking after a young daughter is a monumental task. Dominique has built a fantastic company by using her own experiences and a lot of courage. Dominique said, "I'm so proud of how well we have done. Having Brush Baby recognised by the likes of Karen Brady and the rest of the Nectar Business judging panel is fantastic. I'm so pleased with the advice Karen gave me on finding the right investment partner. It's brilliant to have had access to someone like her to get advice on the business." James Frost, Nectar Marketing Director, said, "The diversity of entries has been fantastic, and it's remarkable to see businesses from such different fields being awarded a Nectar Business Small Business Award."
Chemical alert at firm sparks emergency action. Potentially toxic levels of hydrogen sulfide found in sample. 9 workers were taken to hospital after a chemical alert at a laboratory near Winchester. The staff at Eurofins Environmental Testing in Otterbourne were checked out after a routine environment sample was opened inside a lab and found to contain potentially toxic levels of hydrogen sulfide. 6 fire vehicles, including crews from Winchester and Eastleigh, as well as the HAZMAT team, along with 3 ambulance crews, responded quickly at about 2:30 p.m. last Wednesday. The company's managing director, Rachel Henton, told the Chronicle the 9 were taken to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in private vehicles as a precaution. She said none had actually become unwell, but they were checked out and released the same afternoon. All were back at work at the lab off Waterworks Road the following day. Miss Henton said someone opened the sample and got a smell. 9 people were affected by the smell. "I thought, right, let's get people checked. It was not a nice smell. We took it as a precaution. As a further precaution, emergency services were called to confirm that the laboratory was safe and secure. The company wishes to clarify that the incident was not a result of its activities." She said Eurofins was talking to the client to establish the cause. Eurofins analyses drinking water quality, groundwater hygiene, waste management and pollution. Its analytical services include chemical analysis on potable and waste waters, trace elements, pesticide residues, as well as heavy metals and toxic elements. The firefighters in protective clothing quickly determined that the gas had dispersed, said a spokesman. The crews did a full survey and no gas was present.
Uni hosts commissioner debate. The University of Winchester is taking centre stage in one of Hampshire's biggest political battles of the year. It hosts a live debate for candidates in the race to be Hampshire's first police and crime commissioner next month. The public will get to hear from Labour's Jackie Raymond, Conservatives' Michael Mates, the Lib Dems' David Goodall, and independent candidate Simon Hayes on key issues like CCTV, graffiti and drug dealing. The debate will be chaired by BBC South political correspondent Alex Forsyth. It has been organised by final year BA journalism student Louis O'Brien as part of his work with University Journalism Programme Winchester News Online, WINOL, with help from Dr. William Sheward, University Programme Leader for Politics and Global Studies. University Vice-Chancellor Professor Joy Carter said, "We're delighted to be hosting such a high-profile public debate here at Winchester. The forum will allow Hampshire residents to make a better informed choice on election day." Elections take place on November the 15th, with the Commissioner taking up his or her £80,000 a year duties on November 22nd. The live debate takes place on Thursday, November the 1st at 8:30 p.m. and questions to the panel can be submitted by email to corinnemckenzie@winchester.ac.uk. That's corinnemckenzie@winchester.ac.uk. To book a place, email conferences@winchester.ac.uk. That's conferences@winchester.ac.uk.
Here's another punning headline. Christmas cheer on the cards. Christmas could come early for a couple of creative school pupils thanks to a competition set up by a community-minded law firm. DBB Solicitors, with offices in Stockbridge and Andover, wants to use its seasonal greetings to benefit the community by offering students the chance to design the firm's 2012 Christmas card. The competition is aimed at pupils in Year 6 and Year 10 in the Stockbridge and Andover areas' junior and senior schools. The winning Year 6 designer will receive book tokens, and the successful Year 10 designer will get book tokens and a guarantee of 2-week work experience placement at the solicitor's offices. The competition will run until October 31st, with judging taking place the following week. The winners will be selected by Test Valley Mayor, Councillor Dorothy Baverstock, Andover MP Sir George Young will present the prizes. Both winners will have their cards printed and used by DBB solicitors.
Art will grow on you. Excitement is growing, almost literally, for an art exhibition in Winchester this weekend. Artist Laura Ellen Bacon has created a giant art installation at the Discovery Centre. This is made from Hampshire tree branches and willow. It is part of the Making It Festival of Creativity, which begins today, Thursday, and runs until Sunday. Several artists are visiting the city with their own unique brand, with Laura from Derbyshire specialising in woven pieces. She said, "This work is a progression of a project I did in 2009, and because I had this wonderful long and simple gallery available, I thought it would be ideal to develop this further." She's been designing the piece since April and has spent the last 2 weeks building it at the Jury Street venue with help from a team of around 12 to 15 volunteers. The tree branches are recycled from the County Council's Netley Common Nature Reserve after they've been removed from local heathland to protect the habitat. The display will remain at the Discovery Centre until January. And this is accompanied by a picture of Laura with her intertwined branches.
Architects win approval for first passive house. A firm of Winchester architects has won planning permission for the first passive house in Hampshire. Architecture PLB, based in St Thomas Street, is overseeing the building of the highly energy efficient home. The house is set to be built in Wharf Hill, Winchester, in a garden off Domham Road. The design of a passive house on this site set the architects a significant challenge. Planning and heritage concerns of the potential impact meant the building had to be largely set back within the existing chalk bank. Part of the client's brief was for a building that was quirky and not quite conventional. So an upside-down approach was taken to the internal layout, with the main living spaces and master bedroom at first-floor level arranged around a terrace balcony. This also allows the west-facing house to have fine views across Winchester's water meadows and the River Itchen, while extensive views of the city centre are available from a second terrace at the top of the bank. There are some 20,000 passive houses around the world, mostly in Germany and Scandinavia.
School's land swap field deal. Education chiefs have backed the sale of a Hampshire secondary school's playing field to a housing developer as part of a land swap. Linden Homes wants to build 75 new homes in the field belonging to Swanmore College of Technology in New Road. As part of the deal, the school will get a new field of similar size next to the school, which is out of bounds to builders as it is a strategic green gap. The Department of Education, which has come under fire for allowing the sale of school playing fields, had already approved the plans. Now a panel of county councillors has backed the sale on condition all money raised is used to develop the new field into an all-weather sports pitch with floodlighting and grass rugby pitch at an estimated cost of £1.1 million. A report to the builders, Land and Procurements panel said the multi-use sports pitch will be available for evening and weekend use. Officers said the new sports pitches will enhance facilities for both the school and local community.
Oldest hotel to raise star rating. Winchester's oldest hotel is soon to emerge from a refurbishment and an upgrade to its facilities. The Winchester Royal in St Peter Street is set to move up from a 3-star to a 4-star rating. A public launch will be held next Wednesday with an evening reception to be attended by the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson, and Mayoress Anne Pearson.
Meeting over Homes Plan. Abbots Barton residents will get the chance to debate controversial plans for the new council homes. They got it on Thursday. The City Council is holding a consultation event at Simmons Court in Chandler's Road. It follows residents' complaints over council plans to explore sites for new homes in the area. The Cabinet yesterday approved proposals to conduct surveys in Abbots Barton to identify suitable areas.
Councillor faces court trial. An Aylesbury Parish councillor accused of threatening behaviour towards the council chairman is due to stand trial on November the 29th. Jerry Tull, 64, farming contractor of Main Road, is alleged to have threatened Anthony Manship at a council meeting in the village on April the 16th. Magistrates at Basingstoke adjourned the case until November the 29th, when a trial is due to be held. Tull has denied the charge and was remanded on unconditional bail. He did not attend the latest hearing on October the 3rd.
Consultation on council tax reforms. Postal surveys will shortly be dropping through the letterboxes of approximately 4,000 doors in Test Valley in response to the government's council tax reforms. Approximately 3,000 working-age residents who receive council tax benefit will receive the survey, as well as a further 1,000 who own a second home or empty property. The survey will give residents the opportunity to respond to the government's plans to localise council tax benefit and reduce its level of funding as part of the wider benefits reform programme. As the scheme concerns Test Valley's local approach to council tax support and proposed changes to certain exemptions and discounts, the council wants views from all local residents before Monday, November the 12th. The consultation can be viewed and completed online at testvalley.gov.uk/aboutyourcouncil/consultation-portal. I shall repeat that. testvalley.gov.uk/aboutyourcouncil/consultation-portal. Or a paper copy can be requested from the council officers.
Commendation for Colonel's service in Afghanistan. An army officer from Martyrworthy has been recognised for his outstanding contribution in Afghanistan. Colonel Ian Mortimer of the Queen's Royal Hussars was awarded a Queen's Commendation for Valuable Service, QCVS. Colonel Mortimer was engaged in transferring two of the most difficult areas of Lashkar district to the control of the Afghan National Security Forces, which involved driving insurgents away from the highly contested area of Babaji and taking control of Route 601. He said, "This has been a very pleasant surprise, and I feel it reflects more of what was achieved as a combined force based in Lashkar. I had this phone call from the Adjutant General, Lieutenant General Berrigan, and I was expecting to have a chat on the latest projects I've been working on. So it was a complete bolt out of the blue when he told me of the award. His citation described him as going about his task with gusto and determination, developing a vice-like grip on both Route 601 and Babaji. The awards are for action during the period September 2011 to March 2012 during Operation Herrick 15.
Sainsbury's Petrol Station. Sainsbury's has completed the purchase of a petrol station only yards from its proposed new site in Bishop's Waltham. The superstore has acquired from Rontec the existing Total filling station on Winchester Road. It is part of a nationwide deal of Sainsbury's buying Total outlets across the UK in an undisclosed deal. Total vacated and handed ownership of the site to Sainsbury's on September 27th. Sainsbury's says it is now preparing plans to redevelop the filling station to provide a new kiosk building and fuel pumps. A Sainsbury's spokesman said the new petrol filling station will be a separate facility to the new main food store at the Abbey Mill site. We will keep the local community updated on our plans as we move forward.
African Rhythms. The Osilgi troupe of Maasai warriors will perform music at a Winchester church later this month. From Kenya in East Africa, the group will bring their music and dancing to All Saints Church in Highcliffe on Sunday, October the 14th at 2 p.m. Admission is free with a retiring collection. There'll also be a crafts and wares store.
Showing their artistic side. Hampshire carers and those living with dementia can now showcase their artistic talents thanks to a grant worth thousands of pounds. Meon Valley Carers Group has received £5,000 from the Health Lottery, which will fund a monthly art therapy class that will allow carers, their loved ones and ex-carers to relax and socialise with friends while enjoying a new hobby. To celebrate the cash injection, the group hosted a special exhibition of their artwork. So far, more than £680,000 has been raised for health good causes in the Solent by HealthShape through the Health Lottery. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Jane Ward and her mother Ella Fuller with presumably a sample of their work and a poster for the HealthShape organisation.
And I'm afraid that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles and Irene Dowding. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Claire Caffrine.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithless. Goodbye for now. Thanks for listening and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with the laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you and goodbye again.